Brown, you won an Emmy for your work on season one of Welcome to Wrexham.
That was just a wild experience, having a primetime win like that. We knew that we had something special in season one from the minute we had started. The actual Emmy itself was just, you know, honestly, it really felt like we did the town justice. And I think, you know, the audiences that watched the series, you know, falling in love with the characters, I think it was definitely a real honor to be a part of that.
Oliver, you've won a handful of Emmys for your work in the sports world as well, including work on the Olympics. Did young Michael ever think that you'd be winning an Emmy?
Absolutely not. I've never have guessed that I would be winning these awards as much as I have. It's kind of weird because I'm getting awarded for something I love to do. Oh, cool. Yeah, I won another award.
Right, we are live. We're back, people. What episode are we on, Luke?
This is episode 13. Pretty well. Lucky number 13.
Ooh, and it's a good one. Today it we is. Have Michael Anthony Brown and Michael Oliver, the Michael Bros, as we call them. They are editors for the show Welcome to Wrexham. The first season won an Emmy. They talk about what it was like to receive that win, and then they're now on season 3. Currently nominated, and it was awesome just getting to hear about their process, what it's like to collaborate with each other, how they, you know, trial by fire in the sports broadcast world, and they give some great advice for people trying to break into the industry at this level. Luke, how'd you feel about it? Any other reflections?
Oh, I thought it was great. I think they're super nice. Yeah, it really seemed very knowledgeable about specifically the sports industry. They both seem to really be passionate about what they're doing, so it's cool to hear from them about that.
It was also awesome to hear how they collaborated with Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds on the show, how involved they were with it, and what it's like to work with them on a show like this.
Totally.
All right, well, without further ado, let's dive in. All right, welcome to Michael Anthony Brown and Michael Oliver. It's good to have you guys on today.
Thank you so much, Gavin. It's great to be here, for sure.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
How's your day going so far?
Going well, yeah. Just in the edit, you know, grinding every day.
Same here. Get the kids to school and editing. That's about it.
Nice. Where are you guys located?
I'm in LA, in North Hollywood, and I've been out here for about 20 years in the business for about 15 to 16, so.
Yeah, I'm also in Los Angeles in the Highland Park area. I moved out here in 2005, and I've been out here since. I'm originally from Minnesota.
All right, so we're going to refer to you as Brown and Oliver, which is your last names for people not able to see on the screen. But Brown, I'm curious for you, did you grow up in LA?
I did not. I actually grew up in Missouri, in Springfield, Missouri, until I was 18, graduated high school and moved out to LA straight away.
Whoa. So how did you guys meet then?
We met working at a production company called DLP Entertainment. It was based in Venice, California. And I've been working, I think I'd been working there for a bit, and Mike joined. But we were doing a lot of stuff for Fox Sports. One of the projects we had early on was like a rebranding of Fox Sports and all the regional networks back when it was all, you know, regional Fox Sports networks. And they wanted to like a graphics package and intros to all of the teams that they broadcast for. And so it was kind of a big job for that company.
Did you guys always want to be in the sports content world, or how did you guys land in that?
I didn't. When I moved out here, I originally wanted to direct, and you know, I really did love nonfiction, and thought that, you know, maybe Discovery Channel, that type of thing. And I ended up working for as an assistant. For a company that was doing those type of shows for Nat Geo and Discovery, and as an assistant. And I left there and got a job editing, cutting poker features, poker players and introducing them in the middle of games and kind of telling their backstories. And I think from then on out, I was stuck in sports. It's one of those kind of machines that you, that never stops. So you go from one season of one sport to, another season of a different sport. It's really great job security, to be honest, because sports just keep on rolling.
For me, it's a little different. I've always known I want to be in sports. I actually went to a college, St. Cloud State University in Minnesota, which is actually one of the top TV productions for sports programs in the nation. And I was in charge of a Division I hockey team there on TV. And so I was brought up to, right off the get-go, to work sports. So I was in charge of the Division I hockey team, St. Cloud State University. On Fridays and Saturdays, I broadcast, and we would compete against Fox Sports North at the time, the local regional. And then on Sundays, I would drive down to the Vikings and work for Fox Sports as just a runner. So from the get-go, like, all I have done is sports. I have gone out of sports to just open my portfolio, but mainly sports is what I love to do, because you really can't lie in sports, because you get called out, because so many people watch sports and millions of people watch a certain team, so you can't really make anything up. So I just like to tell the truth, and that's the most important thing for me. And there's so many stories in sports, it's just never ending. So just like Brown says, like, there's just so much work in sports that it's just like, I love doing it and I keep doing it.
That's wild. I feel like you're right. It's such good job security. There's so much content out there in the sports world. And I think you guys have got to be dealing with just massive amounts of footage as well and content. Like, how are you keeping it all straight?
Yeah, when you break it down into one particular moment, I think it really helps to kind of like isolate, like, you know, really, really dial down to like what you're focusing on. Obviously we have a lot of help, with assistants and whatnot, and producers that can help go through footage as well. There is, a fair amount of footage, especially when you're doing like a follow doc series. You know, you have, you know, days, you know, sometimes, you know, for shorter term projects, if it's like a one-off series where you're following two fighters, for example, you know, traveling, you know, going through their workout routines, and you're back and forth between two different camps, you know, you've got days and days and days worth of footage, hours of that day. But when you break it down and you start isolating them into scenes, I think it makes it more manageable, and just being able to cut, you know, kind of what you can with what you have. A lot of times we're also working as stuff's being shot as well, which is nice because it does kind of limit that. You're not getting like it dumped all on you at once. Like, sometimes I think with, feature, you know, longer docs and things that have happened maybe in the past, you get like all of this footage dumped on you at once, and you have to sift through it and really find what the story is there. But it's nice when you can continue, like on Wrexham, Welcome to Wrexham, you know, we're able to cut our footage kind of as the story's going along, and you're discovering the story while it's happening.
Oliver, I'm curious if you have any thoughts.
Yeah, I would say the best thing that we could do is just like, we break down all the footage into months. So we got a folder just for the month, and then each day has their own date folder. So it's, you have to be organized for what we do. If the project's not organized, it's almost impossible to do a show like Wrexham. So it's very crucial that our AEs are some of the best. They organize everything to a T. So it makes it so much easier for us editors to go find a day. Like, they could say it was shot on this date. We can all know exactly where to get it. So it's very crucial to be very organized and very everybody on the same page.
And along with that too, I think there's a real symbiosis between what's happening in the field and communication in post, because, you know, we look at hot sheets, like, we rely on those, you know, a lot. Producers, even assistants, can, you know, making sure that all of the footage is in the system and that there aren't cards missing, for example. All of that stuff like has to really be in sync. But having a good field team that makes great hot sheets, which is just, you know, kind of flagging and marking and listing out what's happening on the day, really helps, us in post to be able to develop, you know, and write out how our storylines are going to go.
Yeah, talk more about that. I'd love to hear the kind of like process from pre to production and post, but kind of from that like post perspective. At what points are you guys getting involved, and what points would you like to get involved?
For us, it's a little different for editing. I was a field producer for a while before I switched over to become an editor. So in the field, basically, it's like you go into the field, you go shoot some things. You already know what stories you kind of tell. And sometimes you don't know until that day, until you talk to an athlete. But then at the end of each day, as a field producer, you got to write down your notes. It's the hot sheets. You got to write everything down, because you're going to forget it for how much things you have to remember and everything that you have to do, coordinate times, places, camera people, days off. It's a lot. So those hot sheets are really crucial. Not just for that hot sheet. I mean, for the entire series, for an entire year. If we ever have to look back on what happened on that day, we just go to the hot sheets. So basically then what happens is after a couple, well, depending on how long the show is, after a little bit, the story producers come in. And the story producers work with the executive producers, and they put out a line of like what they think the story is. And then those story producers would go in and listen to all their interviews and look at the scenes, and they'll do a little rough cut of their own version of what they think the scene should be and how the series, the show goes. Once the story producers get to that point, that's when us editors usually come in. By the time we come in, the story producers and the producers kind of have a rough idea of what this episode's going to be. But again, things change as we edit, because some things won't work, some things don't flow. And like Michael Brown said, like stuff comes in last minute that we have to change. But by the time we sit down in the edit, when we start a show, usually a story producer already had the scenes lined up for us. They usually have a rough cut of that scene. So it makes it a lot easier for us to come in and see what they see and see their vision. And then we go in and look at all the same footage as they did, just to make sure they didn't miss anything, if there's any connecting tissues, parts that we need to put in. But that's usually how it goes for what we do.
When I look at something like Welcome to Wrexham, or early on in season one, we have no idea what characters exist at all, even. And so, our story producer, in the field, our field producer, Milos, was the one making discoveries, really, connecting with the town, talking with people, discovering characters, almost like casting in sort of real time, where, you're getting a vibe off of somebody and kind of hearing their 2-minute version of their story, or, how they got there, and then it kind of goes from there. When we see those scenes and we see characters that really jump off the screen, and we're cutting, a scene with a new character, we're like, hey, is there anything more? Like, can we go back and follow this person's journey? A lot of times, for example, Scoot, one of the characters in season one, was a character that, was going through actual cancer treatment at the time. And so it was a natural progression to sort of follow his journey over that year, all the way up until he's ringing the bell, being declared cancer free, which was, in remission, which was a really fantastic story. And so happy to be able to tell his story. Just an incredible man he is. But like in season two, we get introduced to the women's team and, meeting players like Rosie Hughes, who are just incredible and fantastic. A lot of those storylines and who she was, they had already spent in the field a lot of time developing, following her to work, kind of getting her home life and discovering that. But it's always, us in this, it's a privilege to be able to go back and ask, like, hey, like, we should get more of this. Like, we need, is she willing to take us somewhere from her childhood or something like that, where we can ask the field to kind of follow up on some of these stories or things that are really interesting.
That's nuts. Is there a story that comes to mind about a really challenging scene or moment as you guys were like working through seasons of Welcome to Wrexham?
For me, it was the Millie Tippy tipping story, as well as Paul Mullen's son with autism. Because literally, as I was looking at that footage in season two, literally that same week is when I found out my daughter had autism. Wow. And so it really, really hit hard for me, because to know, like, now I see, I'm kind of going through the same thing as what Paul was, because Paul and them just kind of found out as well. Millie knew for a while. But just hearing the stories, it really just helped me as a father to understand more and see, like, hey, I'm not the only person. I'm dealing with people that are also have it, and they're going through the same thing. So it's like, it was very surreal for me to look at that scene and look at Paul Mullen's interview and Millie's interview and be like, you know, it's happening to me in real life. It just happened this week. And so it was just like, it really hit hard. And for me to really, I was like, I really want to tell the story well. But as things go, you know, happen and things get changed, you know, we go through many different versions, but, that was really the one moment where it really hit me hard, where, you know, I had to sit back for a little bit and shed a tear, because it was like everything that was coming to me. It was like almost meant to be that we were telling that story.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure you're not the only one that that resonated with. And so that's really cool that you got to kind of be an authentic viewpoint of someone who's experiencing this story as well, and then sharing that with others across the world as they are also engaging with children and other relationships they have that are, you know, with autism. That's really cool that you get to be a part of that.
One of the things, you know, maybe it's not on the story side personally, you know, with individuals, but the town itself was as a character, and how it's changed, even the race course, the stadium. Something that was challenging during the edit, I think, was like, you know, trying to find shots, you know, and using B-roll shots of the town and the stadium as it's changing slash being demolished, you know. And so we go out, they shoot a bunch of B-roll that's going to cover, you know, some of our transitional elements and telling stories. And you know, budget-wise, it's not really prudent to spend days every week, you know, shooting B-roll. You know, you kind of need to go out, you know, they shoot for a few days and capture that B-roll. But as the stadium's changing, you know, there's obviously things to look for in footage. You're like, hey, we can't show this shot, you know, because the stadium is half demolished, or, you know, and telling the story, of the town also, you know, they go through all of the different seasons. So, you know, B-rolls and aerials and all of that stuff, I think it made it challenging to kind of, always create a new and fresh version of like a transition, or, you know, showing part of the town in different ways. I know something we've also talked about in regard to the games themselves is, you know, they can be quite repetitive in sports, where, you know, the same things happen on game days, right? Like the crowds arrive, they fill up the stadiums, you know, there's a locker room speech where the coach is revving everybody up, and they go out on the pitch, and there's the kickoff and the things. You know, we're doing sometimes, you know, three matches in an episode, and, you know, not making them feel like they are just hitting those same marks, right? Like just doing those same, oh, here we are at the game and doing it, but like trying to recreate or trying to create different ways to get into a match. Yeah. That is a bit challenging creatively, just to always think of a new way to present a match. And I think that's something that, you know, going back to me and Oliver's, you know, sports background, you know, it's something we did all the time. You know, you're always having to think of a new way to present the opening to a match in a way that I don't want to repeat myself. You know, as a creative, like, sure, you could just sit back and be like, okay, this is where you know, here's the speech here and here's the thing. And you know, to me, that's boring just as an editor. But as a viewer, I think, you know, I think it's appreciated to always find a fresh way in these sequences.
That's awesome. I think especially in today's age, where you have a lot of the algorithm, you have a lot of formulaic approach to, okay, what's going to land the best with the audience, and just kind of burn and churn. It's quantity over quality. And so for you guys to be pushing yourselves to go, now, how do we do this in a new way? I think is rare and is really like encouraging to hear. It's probably what's leading you guys to the success, I would say, that mentality of that this show has really seen. And Brown, you won an Emmy for your work on season one of Welcome to Wrexham. I would love to hear about what it was like.
Yeah, that was just a wild experience, having a primetime win like that. I mean, we knew that we had something special in season one from the minute we had started, and it was about trying to figure out the correct way to tell the story and the way to present the town, and painting it for all its for all that it is, its joys, its sadness, its like sort of pain and also weekly delight, as they, you know, we call it, they went to church every Saturday and Tuesday, sort of the whole town gets together and forms a communion. And for us, I think that Emmy was kind of a result of catching that fever along with them, and wanting to do their story justice, and really like paint the true version of these people, and this experience that they were going through. And, you know, I think one of the things that was sort of apropos is, you know, we were, you know, taking on the season, Ryan and Rob were taking on the season as, you know, we're going to be victorious and in such a Wrexham classic fashion, they lose the final match, you know, which dashes their dreams. And I think everybody who watched season one felt a little bit of that Wrexham, that Wrexham loss that they had experienced. And I'm not so sure that, you know, this series would have been as, well, it still would have been compelling, but I think that there was something very cinematic about losing that first, and having a desire to come back and win again, in the second season. But the actual Emmy itself was just, you know, honestly, it really felt like we did the town justice. And I think, you know, the audiences that watched the series, you know, falling in love with the characters, I think it was definitely a real honor to be a part of that.
I have a lot more questions, but I want to also hit on Oliver. You've won a handful of Emmys for your work in the sports world as well, including work on the Olympics. I want to hear about what that was like for you. And did young Michael ever think that you'd be winning an Emmy for your love for sports and filmmaking?
Absolutely not. I would have never have guessed that I would be winning these awards as much as I have. It's kind of weird because I'm getting awarded for something I love to do. It's like, it's hard. So sometimes I'm like, oh, cool. Yeah, I won another award, but it's like just what I do. It just comes normal to me. So working on all this different sports I have done and everything, I don't want to get to my head. I always stay humble because I'm like, this is what I do. It's kind of hard to explain because I'm just a humble guy. I don't think about myself or anything like that. I'm still learning every day. Michael Brown still teaches me a lot every single day. All our editors, I'm still learning every single day. So just because I won awards doesn't mean I've gave up and given up trying. I still want to challenge myself. I still want to try new things. I'm still learning every single day.
It's so good. And I think that is a driving point behind why you guys continue to be so successful. I'm curious for both of you guys, what is, as an editor in post-production, what does that Emmy race kind of look like? What does it feel like? It feels a little bit like a different muscle to use when it comes to the business. And I'm curious for you guys, you know, speaking to other editors, what it's like to be involved with that part of the process.
Well, I mean, that part of the process is a lot of it's outside of my comfort zone. Even chatting on podcasts or talking about the work is definitely something it's a bit foreign to me. Just, I think naturally we like to be alone in a room and, you know, with our thoughts and just hearing, you know, clips playing in front of our faces rather than actually communicating back. So that part of the process is crazy. What the one thing that I really took away from after the first sort of, you know, Emmy campaign for season one is doing the live events and doing mixers, I think for me was one of the things that I really enjoyed. I mean, I'd been out here for 18 years and, you know, having these the mixer experiences, going out, seeing other editors, talking with other people in the business that are also, you know, up for awards. To me, that community, I think, is one of the things that I've really learned to love. It's really great. I mean, it's a bunch of, again, it's just, there's a weird comfort to people who also don't like to be social as much, you know, and like everyone kind of meshes together in a really great way. And I just love talking about, you know, upcoming projects and things that everybody else is working on, as well as, you know, currently things that are nominated. So that to me has been probably the most rewarding part about all of it.
Yeah. For me, it's like, I've never attended an award ceremony. That's just who I am. I always said, like, that's kind of bad luck for myself. I won the first time. I'm like, you know what? I won the first time. I didn't go. Maybe I just keep it going. But this is different. This show's different. Yes, I've worked on other popular sports shows, but nothing really, you know, got as big as Wrexham with how many people are loving it. People reach out on social media. It's overwhelming. It's like, wow, you know, you can actually sit back and say how proud you are. And everybody just says how, you know, how much they love the show and how much they love the editing and the storytelling. And all the other sports shows I've ever done, we really never get that. It maybe only lasts like a day or two, but Wrexham is different. Welcome to Wrexham is like, we're opening the stories and everything in Wrexham to the world. And so it's just not just here in the United States, it's everywhere. So it's something special. And this is my first time actually doing things like these. And Brown has helped me through it, coaching me through it. Cause again, I have twin 9-year olds. And I also coach soccer. So my schedule is really busy. So with between the kids and everything and with work, it's like really hard to do things like this. But Brown's really opened my eyes. He's, you know, he went through the experience last year with season one. And it is, like you said, it's really nice going out to meet different editors and talking to people and seeing how the processes are going. And like, I'm not the only one like this. So it's really comforting. And just to say, hey, going to these mixers and everything, it's like, oh, you know, everybody here's an editor as well. They get us, like we get each other. So it's something new and something I'm still trying to get used to, but it's something, you know, it's like, okay, yeah, you know, this, I like this feeling. Now, if it was a room full of other people that didn't like editing or didn't know anything about editing, it would be a different story. But everything that we've gone to is, it's pretty much all editors. And it's awesome being around other editors talking about what we do.
Yeah. It's such a fascinating part of the process as far as, you love to edit, you love to create and tell these stories, but it seems like there's this whole other world as well that's involved with being recognized for your work. And I think that's important. I love your guys' humble attitude and the spirit to go, I'm going to keep trying new things. I'm not going to necessarily attend the ceremonies because it's about the work. But I think, like you said, it's doing the town right. It's doing the content, you know, justice by putting in the work to do this. I think a lot of editors, it's kind of a mystical part of the process. And so as we're looking to educate and inspire, it's like, I want to learn more about that side and offer that education as well. So I'm sure we could do a whole episode probably just on the pursuit of, you know, awards and all that stuff. But I would really love to hear more about the show. What was it like to work with Rob and Ryan? How involved were they, like, in post?
Yeah, I mean, working with Rob and Ryan was really, really amazing. Rob came and sat with him for a couple of sessions in the edit when we were locking the first women's episode in season two. And, you know, it was really great. Just a totally normal guy. He's exacting in what he's looking for, you know, being able to have somebody who's able to communicate. Obviously, it seems like he's super comfortable in an edit, super comfortable in that space. So that was one of the things that I really recognized. Rob was probably more involved than Ryan was in a lot of ways. In post, you know, very much hands-on with notes, very much again, also somebody who likes to try and try new things and really encouraging of us trying new things. And that's one of the things that I really respected a lot about working with him, was that idea of, you know, try it. Like, what's the worst that can happen, right? And so a lot of the sequences, you know, that you see, you know, that where we have a little fun with graphics on screen, or, you know, a lot of those things were things that he pushed for graphically. I think in season one, one of the things was like, Phil's enthusiasm was a thing that kept coming up, and it was just a stand-in for every time Phil dropped the F-bomb, we put up a counter, you know, and so it would be a running ticker throughout the episode. But that's the kind of stuff that Rob really, you know, excels at bringing and those little extra icing, little bits of joy that you can bring on screen. So yeah, it was really, really great.
Yeah, it's kind of the same thing. It's like what Mike said, like, they're both awesome. They make our jobs a lot easier. What you see on TV about Ryan and Rob, that's who they are in real life. Like, they're very caring. They're hilarious. They know exactly when to, you know, put in their comedy and when also just be regular people. Like, because they're just regular people, like, just like us. There's no really difference besides, you know, the celebrity, you know, status of that they have. But what you see is what they get. Nothing is preempted. Nothing is scripted. I mean, that's who they are. And it's hard to go through their interviews because you're laughing so hard a lot of times, but they're just natural, cool guys. And like Brown said, like, Rob is more involved in post. And for me, yes, I have worked with a lot of professional athletes. I've worked with some celebrities, but I've never worked with like a celebrity in the edit bay. I've never had a celebrity come into the edit bay and sit down with me. And so when I first had to go in and sit with Rob, I was a little nervous because I'm like, oh, who is this? How is he going to be in real life and with no cameras on and all this? And immediately, he just made me feel like we've been friends for a while. Like, he's just a cool guy. He's like, let's just sit down, relax. Let's, you know, chit chat about random stuff. And, you know, he just made everything just seem so cool and so relaxing and calm me down, like, immediately. So I forgot that it's Rob. And it's like, it's Rob McElhenney next to me. I was just like, oh, it's Rob. Like, he's just one of my buddies. So, he's very clear of what he wants. And he's very clear to letting us know, be creative, do whatever you want. How can you take this to the next level? Like, creativity wise, he wants us to be creative. He wants us to bring things to the table. So that's what's really awesome, because you don't get that much in our world.
No, you don't. And I feel like really Brown and Oliver, you guys are the Rob and Ryan of post on this.
Yeah. The comedy's not as much, but
yeah.
So when you guys are working together, what works well? What doesn't? I'm curious, as co-editors and co-collaborators, what does that relationship look like for you guys?
I mean, I think a lot of times it's really, you know, what you're assigned to, or what's available at the time, or depending on your start date, where you're jumping into, you know, editing on a season, depending on, you know, how that works out, if we're working together on the same episode, or if we're working on, you know, one episode apart. But I think a lot of it is just, you know, communicating and trying to figure out, because scenes will move back and forth. And so I may be, you know, taking a first pass at a scene, that Mike comes in afterwards and, you know, finishes out and takes to the end of the, takes to the end, or, you know, or vice versa. And one of the things that we always talked about, you know, early on, especially in season one, that was something that carried on into season two, was that doing that and having that sort of a workflow where you're not like fully precious over a scene you're working on, I think is super beneficial, because, you know, obviously I'll take something that Mike's done and I'm like, oh, this is really great. Like, I really want to protect this, cause I like, he's done something really cool here. And so I'll just try to leave that alone as much as possible. and maybe, you know, if there's some notes, like tweak some things at the end, but really try to preserve what he's got going on. And sometimes also just by the nature of the kind of note that comes in, I can sit back and admire the way that this section was cut before me, but I'm taking it, and now I have to use it into my episode that I'm taking to the end. And I'll have to kind of dismantle that beautiful thing or that transition. And you know, there's something in that that I think is really beautiful and fun in a collaborative environment where, you know, you try to protect some things, but then you're also trying to reinvent based on like how a new scene is going to fit into an episode that's a little previous. But you know, I think we all respected each other's work so much that it really wasn't an issue either way. Even if something had to be completely dismantled or flipped on its head, you know, recut a different way, because you know we'll already have learned part of that information by the time you know we get to the scene. So I just think really there's a giant level of respect for all the editors that worked in Wrexham for sure.
Yeah, I can't say it any better. We've become to know each other so well that we all still to this day have all different types of styles that we do, and we all know who can. You know, like if a scene comes up, who would do this? And we all know, like, okay, that would fit their person styles more, because we're all about the same thing. We want to tell the best story and best thing. And we all have so much respect for each other that, like, if I have to pass on a scene to somebody else, I'm like, I'm not worried. I'm not mad. It'll be like, okay. Because like Brown said, like, we see it. It's like, yeah, we want to preserve as much as we can. But, you know, just like anything, like, time is our worst enemy. Sometimes you gotta take out some things that you have to be, you know, really wish you could keep in. But we all understand each other, and we all know that we're in for the same thing, to making the best show. That, you know, we all are one now. Like, we just know each other so well, and we have so much respect that it just, there's no fighting, there's no nothing. We're all on the same page from the moment we start to the moment we end.
Can you imagine if we did have to like wrestle for things, like, you know, like, but back in the day, like have like actual like drag outs for like keeping things, like keep it medieval. That would be a very interesting way to get in the exercise in post for sure.
That would be fun.
I was going to ask if there's any stories of like a time in your career where something didn't go really, like didn't go well, like any moments of, it could be on your own part or just like you were victim of a horrible process or something.
I mean, I think there's, especially when it comes to sports and quick turnaround times, I think, you know, especially doing live events or, you know, working inside of a truck. I mean, there was one instance, I mean, I was cutting the NFL Honors, the first NFL Honors award show, and cutting all of the music video packages, like, you know, that were like defensive player of the year, like those type of things, in a truck outside in the cold in Indianapolis. And there was something that it was one of my first remote, like truly remote jobs on site. And we couldn't get the audio wasn't going into the machine right. That like there were some settings that were off, like it was playing weird or goofy. It ended up turning into like a 36 hour day, like working all the way overnight, and still continuing to work, because then by the time we got it exported, then we had notes. And so it was 36 hours from the time that I walked into that trailer until the show aired and I was back at the hotel room. But it was wild. It was a wild time. Those things happen. I mean, I'm sure Mike's been on the receiving end of some of those crazy days before too, where you just like, it has to air. Like that's the one thing that I always got from doing sports, is like, this has to air no matter what. Like there's no blank spot. There's no alternative programming. Like this has to happen. So you got to do whatever you can.
Yeah. It, like Mike hit it on the head. Like in sports, there's no time, like 8 hours, I'm in and out. That's it. I put in my 8 hours, I'm done. There's none of that in sports. There's like, it has to air no matter what, whatever it takes. So yeah, there's, you know, depending on who you've worked for, there's some really, really late shifts, and could be 2 days. You're just sitting in there in the shift. So luckily Wrexham's not like that at all. Wrexham's a totally different version of what sports world kind of is. It's a more refreshing. But in the regular sports world, when I work the World Cups and all that, they hire a lot of new editors. And of course, just like any job or anything out there, there's some people that shouldn't have been hired. So for me, it's like all this stuff would have to air, and I would just get done with the USA tease, the open to a match or the championship game. And then I get told by the producer, hey, a new producer or a new editor came in, and yeah, you have to redo all of his things, and you only get an hour to do it. So that's just the sports world. It's like, and it's just a rush. I feel like that's kind of why I love sports too, because there's no rush like anything else. You get like an hour, and after that 1 hour, millions of people are going to watch it with no notes, no nothing. It's like you don't mess up. If you mess up, millions of people are going to see it.
I mean, that's definitely one of the things also about sports. What I've taken away after, you know, working in those type of sport world environments to now switching off and doing more story-based, you know, long form follow doc series and, you know, multiple seasons, this whole thing. There was some type of proving ground in sports that I didn't really realize that I was going through early at the time, but it's like trial by fire, and, you know, your cuts have to be fast. They have to be good. And yeah, you're right. Sometimes there aren't time for notes. And so basically what you're going to be doing, what you're putting on the timeline is what's going to go out. And so it's got to be right. It's got to be correct. And, you know, I think that's something that through going through this, you know, the past in my early 20s and later 20s, you know, it's a real, you know, really defining in your craft to be able to work quickly and good. And I think that that's something that I bring to, you know, these other shows that have a little bit more time. You know, it maybe allows you to do a couple more different versions of something, to be able to, you know, sort of be entrusted to kind of be alone a little bit more than other people, and know that you're still going to deliver something that's, you know, good, or if not great, like on the other side. And then it's about how do you tweak, you know, what you've done to apply, you know, into the larger story. But yeah, there was something really great about going through that. I mean, I would curse the sky as it was happening, you know, back in the day. And, you know, I'm thankful that I don't have to continue those type of hours now. I don't know that I could survive at 40 years old doing that. But yeah, it's definitely, there's something really special about sports and the types of teams that you build along the way, you know, in that environment.
That is insane. I, you know, in watching the Olympics just last month, I was thinking of all the people that were having to just be working on all of that content. That is quick turning so fast.
It's a round the clock thing. There's somebody always in the edit bay, no matter what time and what day it is. There's always somebody in the edit bay.
So wild. Okay, so I'm curious for you guys, what's like the biggest thing you feel like you've learned from having worked on Welcome to Wrexham?
I think for me, I think there's, it really reinforced, I don't think it's something new that I've learned, but something that really reinforcing is that everybody has a story, that there is, you know, a story in sort of everything, if you ask the right questions and you're willing to listen. And I think that, you know, for people who are looking to, you know, create stories, you know, maybe even, you know, originate something themselves, you know, finding that story doesn't have to be something in some big city somewhere. You know, it doesn't have to be where all the action is, or, you know, something that people already really love. But, you know, you can find it in your backyard. You can find it in something small, like a community group of, it doesn't have to be sports. It could be community theater or something. There's a story everywhere. You find unique characters everywhere. And you can take things that are, you know, you could package into a short, or you could turn it into a series, you know. It certainly helps when you have two major celebrities leading the charge as well. But I think that if you even removed Robin Ryan from this story, it still really works. And the passion that's behind everybody and following the success of the club is... Yeah, so I would say, yeah, there's a story everywhere for sure. And it also is great job security, because AI is good for some things, but AI is not going to go out and find the magic recipe for you know, people all over the world connecting over something that's very human.
Yeah, exactly. It's like another point is kind of the same point, though. It's like when we usually do sports stories, sports docs, or all access sports with teams, we only focus on the team. You never talk about the town. You never talk about anything like that. So for me, it was like refreshing. It was awesome. I always kind of wanted to tell different stories, because I'm like, people don't realize a lot of sports people, the athletes, they have pretty kind of boring lives, because all they do is that sport. So it's kind of hard to make their stories even more interesting. So for me, it was just kind of like the town. How, you know, a sport team doesn't just change the team, it changes the entire town. And you want to bring in those fans, you want to bring in their stories. Like Mike said, like, there's stories everywhere. Like, it's almost like opening a Pandora's box. Like, you know, everybody was locked in this one box of like just telling about the team and telling about the players, but nobody forgot the, you know, everybody forgot about the town people. And those are the people that really make what the team is. They're the ones that fund the team. They're the ones that get the athletes up. So it's like, you know, opening that box was like awesome. And for me, it's like it's awesome to say, because it was such out of the box thinking. And with sports editors, that's what we have to do the most, is we have to think outside of the box all the time, because there's stuff that we will get scenes with a lot of things missing. How can we tell the story that has 1,000 pieces, a puzzle that has 300 pieces missing, but still make it look like 100 or 1,000 piece puzzle. So that's what I learned the best, was like just telling the, you know, bringing in the town people, you know, that's something new. And that's something that I cherished and I still cherish to this day, is we always say when we get done with cuts, sometimes we're like, we need more town. We need more fans, you know, bring that in. Cause again, the player stories, you can tell it over and over again. It's like bringing something fresh and new in, and that's what makes Wrexham so special.
I love that. The kind of twist on its head of a player actually just kind of having a one note, you know, story, whereas you have these people in this town that are being transformed and affected, impacted by this sport, you know, changing the way that their life operates, and just getting for them to be able to rally behind it. They have interesting stories as well. And that's what, yeah, I think the special sauce of Welcome to Wrexham has. And I love that spirit. It really does seem like Robin Ryan, especially Ryan, has an eye and a vision for content that, like you said, Brown, is going to be compelling no matter what. But with his star power that he, you know, his involvement, it does take it to that next level. And that's really interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I think he, you know, his marketing brain, as an extension of his creative brain, is something that I think, you know, is to be replicated. I mean, you know, not only was obviously this venture of him going out with Rob and creating, you know, this purchase of Wrexham AFC and you know, putting their efforts into raising this up, but also to use them in really ingenious ways. I mean, Paul Mullen was in Deadpool, you know, like he just used Paul Mullen as one of the many Deadpools, and you know, he's got the Welsh flag on the front of his thing, and it's just, I mean, it's a way to drive more attention and drive, like, what, like, for people who are casually like, oh, what is this about? And then you read a story somewhere that he's like, oh, he used his star player in the movie. It just is another angle to drive interest to this club and to bring awareness to this club and what's going on. I mean, it really is genius. Using again, Paul Mullen and the One Password ad, I think any of the ad campaigns surrounding you know, Wrexham, I think that it's, you know, and it's not heavy handed. He just used the players and let's people figure out or get curious, like, oh, what is this about? And I think that's something that's, you know, he is just an anomaly and a titan in the business and marketing industry, as well as being so creative. But like I said, like, you know, their, or like you said, rather, like them just putting themselves in the situation is real fodder for you know, that kind of storytelling for sure.
Well, I want to respect your guys' time for sure. I'm super appreciative of you guys coming on here. Just a few maybe kind of last rapid fire questions, if you guys are cool with that.
Yeah, easy. Yeah.
So I do feel like the industry has been in a weird place, you know, based off of a lot of different events. You got COVID and you've got strikes and stuff like that. It seems like you guys have found an interesting part of the industry that has stayed relatively steady and busy throughout it all. And I'm kind of curious what advice you guys would give to editors looking to break into the industry at this level.
Well, it is, yeah, it definitely is an interesting time right now. I mean, I know so many people that are you know, have been out of work for a while, and it's definitely a real struggle. I mean, sometimes I have to pinch myself because I don't really know how I've been able to have, you know, maintain this sort of work at this time. But I would say, I mean, even you know, diversifying, I guess maybe is one thing of producers that you work with, you know, finding ways to work with a bunch of different producers. I mean, I always used to say, like, I mean, even if there wasn't work, somebody's got to be working, you know, and if you know a lot of different producers that are working, or, you know, it kind of works in cycles, that would be the best thing that I could say, is just diversifying the people that you know that are in charge of making things. And also leaving yourself open to small little jobs. You know, if you're a feature editor, you know, and there's a weekend project maybe for something that's sports related or one of these quick turnaround things, you know, getting involved that way, you know, definitely it's they're all sort of setting hooks for future employment, I think.
Yeah, like Mike said, it's mainly contacts, and just meet new people. Even take gigs with new production companies. Just being a PA or being an assistant editor, that helps. And then you just become very friendly, and you got to work with other people. If you have a hard time working with a lot of people, you're not going to get welcome back. So it's just being very open minded, being very creative. Bringing something new and being very personable to get into our industry. That's how I'd say it would be the best advice I could give right now. Because yeah, right now is a really hard time for our industry. With sports, the only time we ever shut down was during COVID. That's the only time sports ever shut down. And the one thing sports always had is sports never shut down, never shuts down. And it did. But when it came back in full swing, and still to this day, I still say, like, contacts, and being personable, meeting new people, trying new things. And that's how we just keep being lucky about keeping our work going.
All righty. That's some good advice, you guys. Thank you for that. Next, what are some of your favorite movies or TV shows? What's inspiring you guys or inspired you guys?
I mean, I think one of my favorite movies of all time is Waiting for Guffman. Growing up in Missouri, you know, this is set in a fictional town of Blaine, Missouri, but it's mockumentary. You know, I really can appreciate the sense of humor and the style and, you know, a lot of times, you know, there's a pace and sort of transitional elements that they use in that film that I try to use from time to time, you know, like choosing when to end a scene. Maybe there's a little more humorous way to end or holding out on a line or one last look of somebody that may get that little comedy element going. The other, I guess, is Eternal Sunshine. The Spotless Mind, and Michelle Gondry's work, I think, is phenomenal. But in that one in particular, I just, again, maybe I'm just more obsessed with kind of transitions, but the way that the transitions work and that he brought in the physicality and the reality of that becomes surreal in his transitions from scene to scene, I thought was brilliant. And I always am looking to find those types of elements you know, naturally, if just in doing not scripted work. Yeah.
Yeah, for me, I love sports movies. It's, you know, it really helps me help my craft. The movies that really come to mind are like Rudy, Rudy and Slapshot, even that, you know, comedy in the movie Slapshot. But my favorite movie of all time is Miracle. And the reason why I say that is because it's an event that we all know the result. We all know the ending of the story. But how could you tell that story that's everybody already knows the result? How can you keep people at the edge of your seats? And coming from Minnesota, and I played hockey my whole life, hockey and soccer, I got to meet Herb Brooks multiple times. Herb Brooks' last interview was actually on my hockey show, my hockey broadcast. And so that movie resonates with me so well in my storytelling and everything like that, because again, they already know the results. How do you keep your fans at the edge of their seats, even though that they know the end of the results? So that movie's helped me multiple times with Wrexham. Cause again, you know, when our show airs, the season's been done. So it'd be easy. People can easily look up the results, but what they can't see is the ins and outs of how it happened and in the locker room. So, those type of movies are some of my favorites because it's the truth. Again, it resonates with me what I do in profession and also with sports. It's just very inspiring, and I just love inspiring movies.
I love it. So how can people keep up with you guys? Work, future endeavors?
Future endeavors, there's a project that I worked on a little bit over last winter and the spring that I got to play a small part in post by these two directors, Brandon Smith and Derek Smith. It's a football about Greenland soccer football, and it's called No Place for Football, and it basically just follows what is sort of the world's shortest soccer season, because they only have like 5 weeks where there's not snow everywhere in their summer, and it's small little communal towns competing against each other to win, you know, the main trophy. And that should be coming out to, I think there's going to be a festival run later this year. I think they just screened it with everybody in Greenland this weekend. So that's really exciting to come out. And I'm working on a new HBO series that will be coming out. It's a new Follow Doc series. Can't get too much into it, but it should be coming out at the beginning of next year in January. I think it's going to make some pretty big waves. So stay tuned for that on HBO for sure.
Cool. How about you, yeah. Oliver?
For me, I haven't done as much because I've been on Wrexham for so long. I only had 3 weeks in between season two and season three. But what I've done recently is NHL. I did an NHL show for Amazon. And it's going to be following a bunch of NHL teams through this past playoffs. I just wrapped on that show a couple weeks ago. That should be airing this fall on Amazon. And coming up, I got a couple boxing shows that I'm just doing that'll be on ESPN. And then possibly some esports stuff coming up too. So
nice.
I like to just try to open my portfolio to not just regular sports, but esports as well. So it's all the same thing. As long as it has a story, I love to tell it.
Nice. Well, the whole purpose of this podcast is really to shine a light on people that are in post, because I feel like a lot of times we don't get to, be out there. We're always hidden away in our rooms. Do you guys have Instagram or LinkedIn or IMDb? Like, what's kind of the best place to follow you guys?
Yeah, I'm on Instagram at that Michael Brown. Is my handle. So I, you know, love chatting with people. Anybody who's curious, feel free to send a DM love to chat.
At Oliver T. Mike. And then on Twitter, you can find me at Mike Oliver TV.
Well, thanks again so much. You can both tell that you guys have an awesome understanding of story, ton of experience, and you are keeping it humble, which is so huge, and why you guys have gone as far as you have. And so it just, thanks so much for the time, getting to share about this show, And we are rooting for you guys for this Emmy season as well.
Thank you so much, Gavin. It was a really great chat. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much.